My intention for this talk is to provide absolutely nothing of material value, but it is my intention to guide you on some sort of path of peace. This peace is a sense of peace that isn't reliant on things going our way. A sense of peace that isn't reliant on being comfortable or uncomfortable. Isn't reliant on having pleasure or pain. Isn't reliant on gain or loss. So can we find the sense of peace that's internal in us, that is cultivated in us, that isn't shaken by life, or death for that matter. So the topic today is mindfulness of death. Maranasati is the word. Maranasati. So when I see that word, I see two words. Mara. You know Mara. Mara is roughly the Buddhist equivalent to the devil. Mara is the personification of the hindrances. Mara is considered the lord of death. And so that word Mara is in there. And Sati. Sati is mindfulness. There's Samasati, right mindfulness. There's Satipatthana, that's the four foundations of mindfulness. There's Anapanasati, that is mindfulness of breathing. So Maranasati is mindfulness of death. And so why would I want to take on such a terrible topic, death? That we have this first noble truth that there's suffering in life. And a part of this acknowledgement of suffering is this dukkha-dukkha, this inevitable suffering that is going to happen in life, which includes death. And so we are invited in this first noble truth to embrace our suffering. Why would we want to embrace suffering? And so that we fully know suffering, embodied suffering, so deeply that we don't become reactive to it. That we don't put up a fight to our suffering. And so there's a certain amount of suffering in life that is going to happen no matter what way we live our life. And that is death. Death may be the, at least for me, one of the more troublesome inevitable sufferings in life. It's something about us. We don't want to die. We don't want to be around death. We are here as creatures to survive by any means necessary. Unfortunately, that survival strategy or push or that feeling of survival, that these bodies are set up for survival, not necessarily happiness. And so to have the wisdom to know, if I turn towards some of the things I'm scared of, I can cultivate that sense of peace that is the higher happiness. That sense of higher happiness that isn't reliant on life going my way. That isn't reliant on, as I say, the materials of the world. That are nice to have. It's nice to have the things in life, but they don't reach that higher happiness that is cultivated in our heart. And so when we come here and we look inward and we ask ourselves some of these tougher questions, what's my relationship with death? Bringing mindfulness towards death. There's a, I heard this Buddhist prayer, I don't know it fully, but may I have enough suffering in this life to bring awakening. That there's a certain amount of suffering that we have to go through in life to abandon all hope on awakening through impermanence. We abandon all hope to look for external happiness. May I have enough letdown in my external perspective to actually turn towards what really brings a genuine sense of well-being and happiness, and just give up on that and turn inward. And as we sit in meditation, When we look at this, can I look inward to see how can I cultivate a relationship with life? An unshaken sense of peace with life. While it's here, because it won't be here forever. So this dissatisfaction with life that led me to the Dharma, a strong point of this was death. When I was 23 years old, I remember I was out shopping. I had a newer job, so I had to buy work clothes, which luckily I don't have to do that anymore. But and so I went to buy nicer clothes, and I was out with my girlfriend at the time, and my mom called me and was like, "We can't, you know, get a hold of your dad. You need to go to his house and check on him." And so I went to my dad's house, and you know, he's probably doing something. I don't know what he's up to. So I knock on the door, and no answer. And I ring the doorbell, no answer. Call him, no answer. And I had a key. I unlocked the door, opened the door to find my dad was dead on the floor. And at 23, before I was part of Dharma practice, I did not have the tools to confront death that abruptly. It shook me really fucking hard. And so I just did the best I could. I just did the best I could, and the best I could was alcohol. Alcohol. I drank. I was drunk the whole fucking time. I remember, like, my dad, active in alcohol his whole life, active alcoholic. That's what killed him, really. His kidneys gave out. And so I even went to his stash and just got fucking drunk. And then hung out with friends. They got me drunk. They were doing the best they could. That's what they thought was the best thing to do, was just get me drunk. And that's the reactivity. I'm closing off my heart by using this alcohol as a way of a coping strategy, which, of course, I was doing the best I could. It made sense to me at the time. But I've just been closed off and closed off and closed off until I reached a place of just not being as involved in this humanness of life. So I closed off to a lot of joy. I still have some leftover karma around this. A depression shows up from time to time. That flares up from time to time. And I just didn't know what to do. I had a lot of beliefs that it was unfair that my father died. It wasn't right. Why me? And so I went through the next couple years just fucking raging on the world. Life made no sense to me. This wasn't supposed to happen. And I caused a lot of problems, got a lot of fights. Physical fights. I've been beaten, I've been jumped, I've been stabbed. Caused a lot of harm in my relationships. Just because I had this fight that is that survival. That I can't be with death. I gotta fight this. And it just caused more harm. Until I, very luckily, and I have no clue, I feel so fortunate the Dharma found me. This practice, this Buddhist practice of looking inward, found me. And I'm so grateful for that. Because it gave me permission to look inward and see what was there. It gave me space. I cleaned up. Stopped drinking, stopped using drugs, stopped fighting. And I looked inward. And this idea of grief. And if anybody tells you that there's like a right way to grieve, they're incorrect. My first process of grief was a great deal of anger. So I sat and created space for this anger. That's what I'm feeling. I can be in a non-reactive space to anger. That I was angry with my father for his act of addiction. I was angry at alcohol in general. like the system, like really some of this hardline straight edge stuff that I was like reading at the time about how fucked up the world is with alcohol. So I was blaming alcohol, angry with alcohol, angry with this, angry with that, and created space where, yeah, it's okay to be angry with this. And I use this anger, because this grief took a long time. So I use this anger to use it as a way to see this injustice. It may not be an injustice, but it felt like an injustice at the time, to expand my world. I went to grad school. Got a master's in counseling psychology, emphasis on substance abuse, because I was dissatisfied, I was angry. And while I was in grad school, I had three friends on three different occasions die from substances and or suicide. And you know, so I was in grad school, I was a couple years clean, practicing the Dharma, doing my thing, and one of my buddies called me and was like, hey man, you know, I got a couple months clean, can you be my sponsor? And I told him, I don't do 12-step work, and if you want, yeah, I'll go to meetings with you, yeah, I am an addict, but I don't do 12-step work. If you want to come and come to my sangha and sit with us, it's a wonderful place, it's a great place, and but I can't be your sponsor, unfortunately. And then he was like, oh well, you know, thanks but no thanks. And this is a close friend of mine. I was in bands with him for a long time. I remember one time I was a little older than him. One time I had to get his mom to sign a note to take him out of state because he was 17 years old going on tour with me when I was like, I don't know, 20-something. But yeah, so I told him, yeah, I can't be your sponsor. And a few months later, yeah, he died from suicide. And just opening up my heart to that experience of guilt. I was like, what if I would have been like, yeah, dude, I got you. Yeah. No clue what I'm doing in a 12-step program. I got you, buddy. Regret. And all this stuff that it's like, yeah, I can feel that. Creating space to feel all these things. Until I land on a place of grief. That all these emotions, that I find space for all these emotions and they shift, they change. There's anger there. There's guilt there. And then this other feeling of grief. You ever, like, grief is such an interesting, it's not a positive emotion, it's not a negative emotion, it's just like kind of a mixture of both. Grief is so interesting because it is a process of love. Like, I love that person and they're gone. So there's love and loss, like in the same emotion. It's such a beautiful and terrible emotion. But it gives me such a wonderful reminder. Like if I feel grief, if I turn towards the memory of, oh, those good times, that's why I'm feeling this grief. Is that there's something, some sort of love in me that's not here anymore. You ever, like, I know me, you ever go to a funeral and you're laughing? And you're like, is it okay to laugh? And it's like, yeah, that's grief. Remembering, yeah, that's why this sucks. Because they brought some good times to me. And so there's two different ways I can see this grief. Well, that first way of looking at this, like, why me? Why me? Why did I have to discover my dad dead on the floor? Why did my friends have to die? Why me? Why me? Why me? And then on the other end, why not me? Why not me? One of my friends died drunk driving. I have drove drunk thousands of times. Why not me? Why not me? I've been in deep and heavy depressions. Why not me? Why not? Well, how did I get out without suicide? Why not me? Why not me? And what it is for me is this Dharma. This path of looking inward and creating space and peace with all of these feelings, all of this anger, all of this sadness, all of this grief, all of this resentment, all of thisness, all of this that shows up, I am so grateful that I'm not as confused anymore, that I can actually go, yes, okay, yes, anger, you're allowed to be here. Yes, you can be here. Yes, sadness, you can be here. Yes, grief, you can be here. And I'm so beyond grateful that I have a space to do this in. And I'm so grateful that you're here to do this with me, that this momentum is happening in life. And there is a part of me that it has this both and. I do want to heal and know and have the wisdom of my heart. And I do want to help others find this place. That it doesn't have to come to a place of ignorance, that I do want to be available for people that are in trouble. Not to necessarily fix, but to heal. That I do a lot of work in recovery, and I tell people often that recovery isn't necessarily conformity. Recovery isn't this, I'll get you to act right. Recovery is to learn how to love more. How much of myself can I learn to love? How much can I learn to love this human experience? Love, not necessarily romance, but love as, yes, you're here too. You can be here too. This love is connection. Can I connect with these parts of myself that are terrifying? Can I connect with the memories of death? Can I connect with my disappointment in life? Can I connect with the inevitability that I will die? So there's a Buddhist story. So there's a man running through the jungle. He's being chased by a tiger. He's doing great, getting away from the tiger, running and running. And then he searches to a halt. And so he gets to a halt because there's an end of a cliff. Until he gets to the too far of the cliff, and this tiger's running after him. And he falls off the edge of the cliff. And as he's falling off to the edge of the cliff, he grabs a vine. And so he's swinging from this vine, looking up, and there's a tiger off the edge of the cliff waiting for him. And he looks down, there's actually more tigers at the bottom. So he's holding on to this vine, tigers at the bottom, tigers at the top. And then as he looks at the vine, there's a little mouse. And the mouse is chewing on the vine. He's like, oh, okay, I can't go up, I can't go down. And then he looks over on another vine, and there's a strawberry. And so the mouse is chewing the vine, tiger, strawberry. And he reaches over, he eats the strawberry. And the strawberry is delicious. And so it's this acknowledgement that, you know, there's a statistic, what is it, 100% of people in this world will die. So that's what we're asked to embrace and know this inevitability in death and Dharma practice. That the Buddha emphasized this even in like the Satipatthana Sutta, the first foundation of mindfulness. If any of you are Dharma geeks around this, the first foundation of mindfulness generally is you watch the breath, you feel the body, and it's this autonomic nervous system. Very dry, not much contemplation, but the only contemplation in this is death contemplation. So we're supposed to come to a place where we acknowledge the rising and passing of the breath, acknowledge that this body will die someday. And by doing this, we have this freedom of, yeah, I'm alive right now. This is gets to a place of appreciation and also a little sense of urgency that I've, like with me, where it's like, I've tried that. I've tried to live the life that I don't have any pain. I've tried to avoid it through alcohol. I've tried to avoid any death. It's like, okay, there's only so much time. Maybe I should look inward and cultivate this sense of peace that is inward while I can. That the Buddha emphasize that this human birth is very rare. While human birth is really rare, it is even more rare to be a human practicing the Dharma. That we have this opportunity to wake up. Don't squander that opportunity. That we can free ourselves from all unnecessary suffering in this lifetime. And so we're given these reflections. They call them the five daily reflections. It's a part of a lot of people's practice to do it in their meditation practice, to reflect on these five things. And the first one is of, I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. That we are these very vulnerable humans. We're here for a brief time. We're in this process of death as we know it. We are aging as we are here. And I know in our culture, hopefully this is shifting some, that it's quite ageist. You know, we want to be young forever. Especially with women, I feel like they get the brunt of this, that aging is not allowed, you have to look a certain way. And it's quite delusional. And not to talk shit, but I am also part, very active in like a vegan world where I help promote healthy eating or ethical eating. And therefore I promote talks and stuff like that. And somebody called me and was like, oh, I got this talk. And it was how to look young. So I'm in this like ethical dilemma where it's like, all right, well, I don't know if that's something I want to promote, this ageist idea that you need to look young and the delusion of that you will look young forever and you need to look young forever. And at the same time, it's something that people tend to care about too. Who am I to say? I'm a dude, be like, just get over it, you know? I feel like it's a lot easier for men to say those types of things. So it's like, okay. So I've not gone beyond aging in all the different and interesting ways aging happens, that you know, I grew up in punk rock, and there's so much. Stay young till I die. 7 seconds, you know. Young till I die. Ramones, I don't want to grow up. Descendants, I don't want to grow up. Like, this refusal to grow up. And I feel like a certain sense of maturity has been, like, really tough for me. And it's totally okay. That aging process of mentally and spiritually growing up a little bit too is totally something that has been wonderful for me. So staying young forever, in my experience, being young is hard. Learning, getting all the bumps and bruises, and then you grow older and you go, yeah, okay, I found a way to be with these bumps and bruises. I'm of the nature to become ill. I have not gone beyond illness. Being sick, we feel like there's some sort of, we've done something wrong, I've gotten sick. There's some sort of fight. How much we see with fighting cancer. And, that's finding that balance of yes, we want to do the healthy things and make the healthy actions, and at the same time, sickness is inevitable, it will happen to us. It would be great if we could cure cancer, and at the same time, the fight, I don't know if the fight is the wholesome way to approach disease, that we're fighting something. And I was fighting death. I was fighting my father's death. And all that fight got me into is just a bunch of trouble. And when we surrender to illness, we allow illness. We don't have to fight to heal. Actually, it's quite the opposite for me. And so if we're, this illness is inevitable, this aging is inevitable, why fight? Why fight? And if you're going to die, die well. It's okay to die. And that gets us to the next reflection. I was going to read it. I'm of the nature to die. I've not gone beyond death. That's the third reflection we do. I listen to a lot of the YouTube talks of Ajahn Brahm. He has so many wonderful talks on there. And his big thing is giving permission to die. That people are in these hospitals and they're fighting to stay alive. And they don't want to let their families down. And so he says, he sits with them and says, I give you permission to die. Dying is not a failure. We treat it such like a failure. I did something wrong, I died. You know? Like even my father's death and my friend's death, I went somewhere wrong there. I went wrong there. I let them down. You're allowed to die. You should die. Die well. And even just like giving permission to my friends and family that have died, it's okay. Even that they're not here, giving them permission to be dead. That I'm holding on to this attachment of, I can probably figure out a strategy in my head so I can go back in time and help their mental illness, and so they won't be dead right now. No, they're dead. They're allowed. You're allowed to be dead. You're allowed to be dead. That was great, those times we had together. That was terrible, the time you left. It's okay. It's totally life. Die well. Die well. I put up a flyer online, and I was making this flyer, and the picture, if any of you saw it, it was like a toe tag on the obviously dead body's feet. And I showed my wife that, and she was like, who's going to go to that? Like, that's terrifying. And that's kind of what we're doing here. We just sit with how terrible and terrifying death is. And there's the joke about the Buddhist coroner. The Buddhist coroner kept on getting fired because on the cause of death on the toe tags, he kept on writing, you know, cause of death, birth. The inevitability of this death. Embrace it and know it. I must be separated and parted from all that is dear and beloved to me. That's the fourth reflection. Everything we love is going to go away. Can we be okay with that? That's what I was saying. Putting a certain amount of appreciation and gratitude that it was here. And it's gone. And hopefully something else will arise and that'll pass too. And that's why we're looking inward to the fifth reflection here is, I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as the arbiter. Whatever I do, for good or for evil, to that I will fall heir. The only thing we own in this life is our karma. And this karma can be a very confusing word. Karma is a Sanskrit word for action. So the only thing we own in this life is action. And so we are balls of action. Life is insistent on living and dying. And so can we lock into that energy of living and dying and meet it with peace, because that peace will grow. Like even in the mind, that what one ponders upon becomes an inclination of the mind. We use that energy of the mind to you have metta phrases on your shirt. We concentrate and cultivate metta. And so we're therefore, then we train the mind to have metta more often, then it will continue and grow. And so that's what we own in this life. If we cultivate hatred, if I that's where that karma switch happened to me. My father's death, I hated it. I hated that he died. I hated the feelings that I had. And then some karma just swiftly, abruptly hit me with this dharma. And it was, can I meet death with peace? Because that's the only thing I own. Not the life, not this body, not these emotions even. That this peace is what is the air. This action of movement, of peace. and loving kindness or hatred and ill will. That's what will continue. And so we make a spiritual commitment to note that all this is inside of us. That we do this cultivation practice. One of my teachers, the Venerable Panyawati, says she doesn't like using practice, that Buddhist practice. It's a convenient word. We use it often. Practice, as if we're practicing for something coming up. But she likes cultivation, that we're cultivating and growing this in us. So this is the path of peace. We cultivate peace even in the face of death. So I want to do Maranasati, a sit with this contemplation of death. That Maranasati, as it's taught in the early days in India, the time of the Buddha, there was charnel grounds. The charnel grounds were when people died, or still die over there, that they're placed in these charnel grounds, so there'll be dead bodies just lying out. So the Buddha instructed us to go look at these dead bodies. Fully know dead bodies. Look at them and contemplate our own bodies as the same as those bodies. And so when you see the charnel grounds, there'll be different types of bodies. There'll be a newly dead body, bloated. There'll be a body that's decomposed, that's just a skeleton, scattered. I too am of the nature to become a scattered bag of bones. When I was, a teenager, I don't know anybody familiar with rotten.com? Anybody? Yeah, that was pretty terrible, huh? And there's something so, shattering. Rotten.com, it was a place, I guess it's still a place, where they would have pictures of dead bodies. And so as a teenager, oh, look at the dead body. It has this, earth-shattering feeling into it. And so the Buddha instructed us to meet that feeling, know that feeling, and know it so well. You know, some of the pictures of Rotten.com weren't they're pretty terrible. But to know, if you see, a dead animal on the side of the road, maybe look at it for a little bit, see what it feels like. Even in Maranasati retreats that sometimes they do for older people retreats with this, they'll have pictures of dead people. And even in service as Buddhists, maybe doing they have the Zen hospice, getting to know people that are dying in the process of death and even transitioning to death. And if you have ever been a part of that transition of life into death, getting to know that, this person you know that is alive, and then all of a sudden they're dead. And even if you knew their dead body, if you've seen it open casket or had been there in the process of them dying, touch into that feeling and knowing that it's 1 second they're alive and the next they're dead. And right now, I'm alive. And so finding a gentle way to sit. Allowing your eyes to close. Touching into the awareness of this breathing body. Just a few seconds of the arising and passing of this breath. Checking in with the body. What does the body feel like? Is there any tension or activity on certain parts of the body? And checking into the heart space. What is held in this heart? What is felt in this heart? Maybe purposely setting an intention of allowing this body to be the way it is, allowing this heart to be the way it is, allowing this mind to be the way it is, saying yes to this experience as it is. So bringing in this practice of contemplation, envisioning a body that is a few days dead, just out in the elements, like you just stumbled upon a dead body, whether it's 1, 2, 3 days dead. Like a swollen blue, it's festering, thrown on the ground, left dead. And just bringing this dead body, freshly dead body, into your mind's eye. What is felt around meeting a dead body? And acknowledging that this body too is of the same nature, that I am of the same nature to die. I am of the nature to die. Now envisioning the same body being eaten by all kinds of little creatures like crows and worms. This body too is of the same nature, left out in the elements, be eaten. Maybe envisioning what this body would be like, dead and eaten. Of the nature to die. This body too will die. And so as time goes on, envisioning a body decomposed, reduced to a skeleton, held together with some flesh and blood, held together by the tendons, a complete skeleton, just little bits of skin and blood. It's being decomposed. And this body too. I am of the nature to decompose. And the nature are to be held together by little tendons. Mindfulness of the skeleton. So keep going with the same body without flesh. And the tendons break. The skeleton becomes scattered in all directions. Bone of the hand over there, a bone of the foot over there, a skull in a different place. And reflecting that our bodies are of the same nature. We will decompose into a skeleton to become scattered. Reduced to bones, left alone, left abandoned. Feeling into these bones in the body right now. One day they'll be decomposing, not held together with skin. Now reflecting on these same bones sitting there for over a year. And just sitting there, a pile of abandoned bones. This is inevitable. This will happen to this body, just a pile of bones. Everything we're clinging to now will be gone. So these bones reduced to dust, so old, bones that turn into dust, fly within the wind, scattered dust. I too am of the nature to turn into dust. Just lovingly remember this body will die, decompose, become dust. So welcoming in these reflections, I am of the nature to age. I am of the nature to age. Confronting this truth with peace and gentleness, I am of the nature to age. I am of the nature to become ill. Can you be gentle with this nature to become ill? I am of the nature to die. It's okay to die. It's okay to be alive right now. I am of the nature to die. We're in this process of death, finding beauty in all of it. Everything I love, I'll be separated from. Everything I love, I'll be separated from. Isn't it beautiful to know there's things here that you love and acknowledge someday they'll be gone? So much beauty and wonderfulness in life, allow it to rise and pass. Everything I love will pass. So the only thing we own in this world is this karma. How do we meet these truths? How do we meet this truth of death? How do we meet this truth of illness? How do we meet this truth of aging? So may I be at ease with this truth. May I be at ease with this truth. This action of willfully passing forth ease and peace. May I be at peace with this truth. This is what we own. This cultivation of peace, ease, gentle. Can I be gentle with this truth? And whatever arises with this truth. When our time is limited, don't squander your suffering. Use it to awake in this moment. Awaken to the truth with a sense of ease.